All right, everybody, welcome back. In part two of this interview, we sit down and talk Michigan black bears with Kevin. I am not familiar at all with black bear hunting. I've never done it before. I do have a few preface points, but that's it. Adam has. So between the two of us, we just threw a bunch of questions at Kevin, and he was nice enough to answer all of them, and we learned quite a bit. And as a matter of fact, the bear season is going on right now here in Michigan, so if you were lucky enough to draw a tag for one of them critters, hopefully you're having a good, successful, safe season. But yeah, like I said, we learned an awful lot, and I think you guys will too. So without further ado, part two with Kevin Swanson. All right. So can you, kind of like we did with the wolf, can you give us a kind of historical timeline on the Michigan's black bear? What's the timeline of their population? I mean, did we wipe them out kind of like we did the wolf?
No, we didn't wipe them out, but they, you know, they were considered to be vermin long ago. People would just gut shoot them and let them go off into the woods until they were a game animal and a protected animal for a time. And I think it was 1925 when we established, when the what was called the DNR, the Game Commission, started a season. I think it was 1925. So, but yeah, we've always had black bear there. Now they've grown to be a very iconic species in Michigan. They're a habitat generalist. They're an omnivore. You know, they feed on many different things. And we've got, you know, I mentioned habitat before. We've got so many different soil types in the Upper Peninsula and cover types, age classes, so it's really great habitat for black bear overall in the UP and the northern lower. I mean, we got a lot of bear in the northern lower also, so.
Right, so, I mean, bear hunting up here has been a thing for quite a while then.
Yeah, and there's a lot of controversy around black bear management because they're just another one of those iconic species that you don't see very often. We've got a lot of interested groups that are very involved in the process that I have to meet with. I mentioned the Bear Forum before, and there's 17 different organizations that we meet with, and I'll present all the data to them, all of our graphs, hunter success rate, hunter effort, what the harvest was, and then there'll be a debate about where we should go with quotas, and there's always people that want to have many more bear than we have right now in the landscape, and there's always a lot of people that want fewer bear, so it's always a sort of a battle to get through that process, and we're kicking that off right now. But I really enjoy it because you hear from so many different people, and you know, there's always people that are really upset, but you can't take that personally. You just do the best you can and try to base your decisions on data and science, on our recommendations, and then we bring those to the NRC and our director, and they make the decision.
Okay. Like bear trapping, I mean, that's not a thing anymore, right? You can't do that in Michigan, or can you?
No, you cannot. No, you cannot trap bears. No, you were just looking at the bear traps out the back. We can trap them
for nuisance. Yeah, but not the old fashioned.
No, you're not allowed to trap bears. So we just take, you know, we have the harvest season that's in September. The dates start, they're a bit different in the northern lower than they are in the UP, but they start on September 10th in the Upper Peninsula. The baiting, you can start that 31 days prior to the season. So a lot of people are getting excited about that. I've been getting a lot of calls and emails from residents in the Lower Peninsula that are coming to the UP that got their tag. They're really excited, so they always call for advice, and they ask about guides because some of them hire guides to run baits for them, and a lot of passion amongst our hound hunting community for black bears. So it's a great tradition here in Michigan.
And we only have a fall season, right? There is no spring bear.
There is no spring bear season here. No.
Okay.
No.
I think that's a great tip. You just kind of touched on it a little bit. If you're wanting to get into bear hunting and you don't know that much about it, who better to talk to than the Michigan DNR, who are overseeing this forum this season? You know, it's never a bad idea if you have questions to pick up the phone and call somebody in an office somewhere that might be able to answer your questions. Don't be scared to do a little research to ask some questions, because you'll never know otherwise. So
yeah, and there's a lot of hunters out there, like deer hunters. A lot of the guys from my deer camp that love to deer hunt and grouse hunt and fish for brook trout, but they've never tried bear hunting.
Yeah.
And so I have really tried to increase, or we, the DNR, has tried to increase the number of applicants. So we're up to, well, it's over 50,000 people that apply for preference points in mm-hmm. Michigan. So there's no lack of demand, for sure. We've got a lot of bear hunters and people interested, but we always want to build that clientele and pass that down to Absolutely. Future generations. So it typically takes a few years to get a tag. You can get a tag every year in the UP during some third hunts, or like Berglund over-the-counter tags are sold. Because normally we don't sell all those tags prior to that time. Mm-hmm. But then you've got, like, where I hunt, bear hunt, in the, it's called the Gwynn BMU. It takes 5 or 6 years to get the first season. So there's three different seasons in the UP. The first is reserved. First 5 days are reserved just for bait hunters. Mm-hmm. And that's always the best season to get if you're a bait hunter, because there's sure. less competition and you have a higher hunter success rate. So it's a great tradition. They're, if you've never tried bear meat, I like it better than beef. Just about every year at my deer camp, we cook bear the night before season with a deer roast and pork and beef roast. We mix it all, and bear meat is, I mean, it's delicious. It's the best. Yeah, yeah, it's very high in protein, and the taste, it's better than beef, I think.
Right. So before we get too far into this, I need to make mention of the wandering bear that we had down by us. I'm sure you heard about, what was it, 2 years ago?
I think 2 or 3 years ago, we had a bear that came out of the northern part of the state and wandered down, what was the western coast?
Yeah, following the lake, it sounded like, going Berrien County. I think it ended up in LaPorte County, Indiana.
I think Michigan City is where it finally was captured, I believe, because it turned into a nuisance bear when it got down that far. It found some trash cans and some bird feeders that it particularly cared to be around, and they went in and took that bear out. Not sure where they relocated it to, somewhere up north, I believe, but that was an exciting time for us.
Yeah, that bear ended up dead, unfortunately, because it was causing a lot of property damage. But yeah, we tracked it all the way down that west coast, because there was nuisance complaints all the way down into Indiana. But that's part of that normal dispersal, that bears also disperse. You know, we got right. that core population in the northern lower, and we mm-hmm. had more bears dispersing as that population has grown. You have more young dispersers that take off, but a lot of times those are the ones that get into trouble.
Right.
So we're trying to address those issues. It's unfortunate that bear had to be killed, but I remember getting a lot of calls from the media, even in Indiana, and the Indiana, mm-hmm. The DNR, their organization, was in a tiff over that and trying yeah. to trap. They borrowed some of our traps to try to trap it, and I think it was trapped, and then it got out of the trap somehow. Down there, but I don't remember all the details, but that was a big story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And is it usually male bears are the ones wandering, or females do it too?
The young males are the majority. Yeah, the younger male bears are the majority of those nuisance bear, but there's females that are nuisance bears prior to that, when they have cubs, and when they do have cubs, you know, that we have. Every year, there's dogs that get killed in the northern lower by bears, by sows. You know, someone lets their dog out of the house, and there's a sow and cubs yeah. in the backyard, and the dog goes after it. And, of course, that sow is going to do exactly what she
Mama
needs
bear,
to do.
Mama bear, right.
Yep, she protects her cubs. So we've had several dogs get killed by sows down there, and people get very upset about that, but... You know, the blame is on ourselves, really. If I'm letting my dog out when there's a bear in the yard, she's going to protect those cubs.
Right, absolutely.
That's just her instinct.
So the wandering bears, I'm sure, has some pull in tag quotas for the BMUs, right? I mean, you're trying to avoid the population getting so big to where these male bears are wandering all over the place causing trouble, right? I mean, that has some weight in there.
Well, that's an indicator of the population growing when you have more dispersers. But we've got many different indicators that we look at. I mentioned hunter success rate, hunter effort, hunter satisfaction. Then we have an abundance estimate, where we have an estimate of bear abundance by region through a method called statistical catch at age analysis. So that gives us an actual estimate. We use capture mark recapture methods that feed into that model and are used as a scale for that model. It's not exact, but it's based on scientific data that the hunters have given us through mandatory registration going all the way back to 1992, so sex and age data. So we have an estimate, and we just got a new estimate now that I'll be talking about in months to come as we assess where we should go with those quotas. But the estimate and all of our indicators show an increase in bear numbers in the northern lower. So we have increased tags, and we may attempt to do that again. But again, the Natural Resources Commission will make that decision, and there'll be a lot of people that are opposed to any increases in the northern lower, and a lot of people that are in favor.
Right, right.
There's always going to be those people that would rather see a bear on a postage stamp than like a dinner plate, you know, right. Winnie the Pooh, whatever.
Right. Yeah, and actually, surprisingly, there's a lot of bear hunters that, you know, they want more bear all the time. And I can understand that, especially the hound hunters, because they want to be able to run bear whenever they bring their dogs up. And they're not necessarily interested in killing bear. They're in it for their dogs. And a lot of these guys don't even harvest the bear anymore, but they want to run bear. They want to see tracks. They want to know the bear are out there. So for some, the more bear, the better, no matter what.
The thrill of the chase doesn't always have to end with harvesting the animal.
Right.
In a lot of cases, it's just fun being out there, getting the exercise, and not sitting around the house.
Yep, so. Absolutely.
Right, and they seem to be doing great up here. So I'm assuming the rising wolf population hasn't affected their numbers at all with prey competition or anything.
No, you know, bears, as I mentioned, are an omnivore. Like this time of year, they're feeding on juneberry, blueberry, raspberry, different types of vegetation. Then they move into more hard mast like acorns, beech nut, beaked hazel. So they're an omnivore. They feed on many different things. So there's no competition really for between bear and wolves with regards to deer as a prey species. As I said, you know, a bear probably takes a couple of fawns every year, and they're just roaming areas. And if they come across a fawn, they're probably not hunting for fawns, but if they come across one, they'll
take advantage of
that. Was my next question, if they actively hunt for fawns, like say in the springtime when they start dropping.
You know, that some probably do. It's a learned behavior, so that's passed down. And when they're roaming around, they're looking for fawns. I mean, I don't think they are as purposeful as like coyotes and wolves are, because of course bears are omnivore, and they're feeding on a lot of vegetation that time of year too. So they're not targeting fawns, but I think they do look for them, but not to the extent that wolves and coyotes do.
Right. Now, so like if we have a goofy year with weather, say a drought or something, and these natural fruit trees or whatever that they eat aren't producing that much, do they tend to wander into yards more often, like with ornamental trees, or you know what I mean? Do they get in more trouble when that kind of thing happens?
They do, yeah. Typically, when we have low amounts of natural food availability, natural mast, when you have summers that are droughty, where there is less mast, like this year we got a good blueberry crop again, but if you didn't have that and you didn't have service berry and black cherry, then you run into more nuisance issues because they're coming into bird feeders more often, or to dumpsters, or to grills. They smell those things, and they're always going to take advantage of an easy meal. So that's true. They do get into more trouble when they don't have those natural foods.
And as the locals are probably well versed in trying to avoid those conflicts, right? Like not putting their trash out till the night before or the morning of, and stuff like that. Like there's steps they can take to.
Oh yeah, and we try to advertise it. I think you said you've talked to Katie Keene and Hannah Schauer. They do a great job of outreach. We got billboards. We constantly publicize the need to take down your bird feeders. But on occasion we get bears that just continually come back, even if people take down their feeders, and that's what you saw, those traps outside. We'll go and trap a bear and relocate it. We got to relocate it a very long distance, 60 miles or more preferably, because they got a very good memory and they can just show up back the same place the next day because they've got such a large range, so and such a long-term memory. So we do trap them when needed, but we won't do that unless the resident has done everything they can to avoid the problem, because if you keep a bird feeder up, we could trap one bear and move it, and another is going to show up there if there's a food source.
Right,
we got to ask people to remove that.
Because bears, like any other animal in the wild, will absolutely be an opportunistic feeder. Why would it want to go out and purposely hunt for a fawn if it can go raid a bird feeder, you know, and not have to work as hard to get nutrition, to get everything it needs to keep on about its day? You know, like anything else, it's going to take the path of least resistance. And like you said, with the learned behaviors, some of those bears learn that a trash can means easy food, a bird feeder means easy food, and those would be the bears that you would have more of a nuisance problem with, just because they kind of acclimate themselves to being around people just for that easier taking, you know, food or whatever.
Right.
Right. And you don't have to euthanize them very often, I'd imagine. After you relocate them, it's usually we're good.
Yeah, we don't dispatch them very often, but in certain cases we do. If they're habituated, we had one on Drummond Island last year that was being hand-fed, and that's just a bad.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we have that. That happens occasionally in the UP and the northern lower where people are hand-feeding bears. That's just not a good idea. You don't want to ever habituate a wild animal like that because it could lead to an attack.
So, well, there was a recent attack, right?
Well, that was a few years ago. That was an attack in the northern lower, yeah. That Abby was attacked. She was running. And that bear was later identified and dispatched. And we have several bears every year that are killed that we need to kill, but it doesn't lead to any sort of population level decline. We don't prefer to do that, and people normally frown on us when we do, but it's public safety is of utmost importance, and we're just not going to take any chances with public safety. If there's a risk, and we call it a category one bear, if there's a risk to human safety, we have to kill that bear.
We like bears, but we're team people, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
There's not a lot of gray area there with a bear. I mean, hand feeding it's one thing, but when that bear decides that it wants to eat, if you got your hand anywhere near it, it's not going to care what's in your hand versus what your hand is to it, you know.
Yeah.
You're a walking food source, so.
That's right. That's right.
Now, that's important to remember.
Right. Now, if a black bear were to attack you, it'd be more like, would it be an aggressive sign? Like, even if it didn't have cubs, would it be for, like, food or would it be for territory? Like a grizzly would come at you if you're just inner area, right?
Oh, sure. I mean, it's more prevalent with grizzly bears, but there have been attacks from black bears in Michigan, in other states, in other countries. It just happens, but it's very, very rare. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of brook trout fishing in swamps and habitat where you find bear tracks often, and I'm never fearful of that. But there is a just like if I were going to run across the street, there's a chance I could get hit by a car. There's a very minimal chance with any species, wolves included.
Right.
Doesn't happen often, but there could be an attack. That's just part of taking part in outdoor hobbies. But if you ever do, and I had a couple times I've gotten between like a sow with cubs, that's not a place you want to be, of course.
No.
When you're fishing and the sow runs the cubs up the tree and you're right there and you don't know where she is. I mean, that happened. And you just want to back out of those areas slowly. Stand tall if you see the sow, or if you see a boar, you just stand tall, wave your arms, yell, make yourself appear to be larger than you are, and they don't want to be around people. Right. They're very, very afraid of us unless they're habituated, and that's where the problem can come in.
I've been in that position before when I was in Canada. I filled my tag the first day, and I was sitting in a stand on a Wednesday. We started on a Monday, and I didn't have a gun or anything with me. I was done hunting. I had filled my tag, and I was just checking out, you know, taking pictures or whatever. And right around dark, I could hear a bear off to my right behind me, and all of a sudden there's a cub looking at me right in the face. Mama had run the cub up the tree right next to me on this side, and I could hear her underneath me making all sorts of noises, hopefully at this other bear that I could hear off over here, but I couldn't see anything but the cub up the tree looking at me, and I'm thinking, well, this is where I'm going to die. This is it. This is it for me, you know. I've never been more scared than I was when I saw that cub just eye to eye with me, because that Mama was down on the ground somewhere, and I'm in a climbing tree stand or a ladder stand. It wouldn't take anything for her to knock me out of it, you know. Right. And standing up and making yourself look tall is easy to say, and it's harder than hell to do. That was the last thing I was thinking of. I was trying to grab my flashlight, like thinking, what can I defend myself with against this bear? And that's good advice to have. Also good advice is not go in the bear woods alone by yourself without a way to protect yourself.
Right. In the middle of the Canadian woods, right?
Yeah. The camera's not going to do the trick. So.
For somebody who wanted to start hunting these critters, how does your point system work? You want to lay that out?
Yeah, well, it's based on supply and demand. So I'm the one that sets the quotas or recommends the quotas for each of our BMUs after I meet with our biologists and with our law enforcement division staff. Everybody gets a chance to give me input on that. And then we come up with the quotas by those BMUs. But then you have a certain number of applicants that might apply, say, for the first hunt in the Gwynn unit or to the north of us here, to the Barriga unit, it's called. And because there's more applicants for some units than others, it takes longer to get points. So you basically buy a point every year. Mm-hmm. In the Gwynn unit I hunted a couple of years ago, it took me 5 years. So right now I'm just buying those preference points. So I know, and anybody that wants that drawing statistic information can send me an email and I'll send you the spreadsheet that shows you how many points you need approximately to get a hunt in a particular unit. So you've got applicants and then you've got the number of licenses, and I figure out the number of licenses by using a 3-year average rolling hunter success rate. So I have a desired harvest that's set by our biologist after we move that through the NRC. They have the final say again, but let's say the desired harvest or target harvest is 100 bear for a particular unit. Mm-hmm. I've got to look at the hunter success rates to figure out how many licenses we should issue for that BMU. So that's how that comes about.
And a lot of that is because there are some areas that are better to hunt for bear. There are some more berry areas.
Like I noticed the Baldwin BMU, we were talking about that earlier. Like it always seemed like it was just a pain in the ass to get a tag for that BMU without having a shit ton of points. But there's a lot of bear up there.
There is a lot of bear, but that's a smaller unit, and it... You know, we doubled the number of licenses for 2017 and for this year, 2018. So we've got, I think it's only 160 licenses. So there are a fair number of black bear in Baldwin, and we are looking at potentially increasing the harvest again. The data is suggesting possibly that we should do that, but we've got to reach out to all of our stakeholders and have many meetings on that over the course of the fall here, and then we'll make that recommendation to the NRC. But that unit is smaller. Just to compare apples to apples, if you look at the lower peninsula, we've got about one bear for about every 10 square miles of land in the northern lower. And that includes Gladwin BMU, which is transitional habitat, not nearly as many bears. So you want to look at square miles per bear harvested, and what those square miles or what that geographic area can potentially hold for bears. So in the UP, according to the estimate, we have about one black bear for every 2 square miles on the landscape.
Wow.
So we have a lot more bear up here.
Wow.
Because it's much more forested. You have a lot fewer people, but that's not to say we don't have a lot of bear in the northern lower. We've got very good bear numbers, but there's a lot of interest in that Baldwin unit too. You got a lot of applicants.
Mm-hmm.
So it can take 14 years, but I get a lot of complaints about that from people. Send me emails constantly that they're really upset they didn't get a tag again, you know. So
I imagine.
But you got to be cautious with bears. They're not as prolific as many of our other game species, so you can't harvest as many.
Right.
I mean, they've got a large range. They're territorial also. You don't see them all the time. It's not like going out and hunting snowshoe hares. You know, you've got to be more cautious.
And that's where the point system comes in too. To get a point, it's real easy. You tell the guy that you're buying the tag from, I'd like a bear point, and it's, what, $4 or something? And
$5, yeah.
Yeah, he puts it on your, you know, you can accumulate points, or when you get enough points, you can enter a particular drawing and try to draw your tag, spend your points. But you can accumulate points. You know, I've been buying bear points for a while now, not using them just to have them. If I ever do decide I want to go bear hunting, it's a good thing to have if mm-hmm. you want to get into bear hunting. It's just when you buy your tag, tell the guy you want a bear point, and that's it. $5, you're done, and it's that easy. So.
And then when you finally do prefer a certain hunt, if you don't get it, you still get another point, right? So you can build your points and then enter mm-hmm. the drawing, and you get another point even if you don't get your tag. And then that next year, you got even a better chance of getting the tag.
It's really a pretty fair system.
Yeah.
All things considered.
It's, absolutely.
Very well done.
How do you have a number on out-of-state tags you end up selling for bear?
Great. I got it in my office. We just increased that from 2%. There was a 2% cap on non-residents in Michigan, whereas Wisconsin and Minnesota have no cap on non-residents. So last year, I get a lot of complaints about that, and I really think it was fair to increase that cap. So I really pushed to have that increase to 5%. We were fortunate. We were able to do that. The NRC allowed that. So now the cap is 5%. So we had, you can figure it out, we had about 7,000 licenses, and 5% of those at maximum go to non-residents.
Okay. Oh, wow. Wow.
So it's not a lot. I mean, it's not a lot.
Is there any are they in the lower peninsula more so than the upper peninsula, or you don't have those stats?
I don't have those stats. No, there's going to be more of them in the upper peninsula. It depends on where those non-residents would would put in for those tags.
Probably people from Wisconsin coming over.
Right, and I'm sure that has more to do with population density of the bears and the availability of the animal itself. You know, why would you go hunt the lower peninsula if you got one bear every 10 square miles and you can get five bears for 10 square miles in the upper peninsula?
Right. I could see somebody in Wisconsin, too, getting a tag, shooting a bear, and then getting an out-of-state tag from Michigan, going across the border right there, and popping one over in the UP.
You mentioned that, though, the density of bears, but then you look at that Baldwin unit. There's fewer hunters because there's fewer bears, but the ratio of hunter to bear is very favorable to the hunter, and that's our highest hunter success rate is in Baldwin. We've had it up to like 70%. 70%
of hunters take that's impressive.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you can compare that to Canada or any other state. I mean, that's really, really good.
What's an average annual harvest for black bear across the whole state?
About 1,900 or so. Yeah, 1,900 bear harvested.
A lot of good eating.
Yeah.
That's a lot of good eating.
It is.
Yeah, especially because the season's not real long, correct?
It's longer in the UP. You know, it's like a 9-day season in the northern lower. Other than that, the Baldwin North unit in the upper peninsula, it goes into late October. So you got quite a while to hunt in the UP, although you have less of a chance later in the season because you got those sows that begin to den up and then the boars follow. But they can start denning up in October depending on the temperature and food availability. They might emerge from the den again in November. Deer hunters get a lot of sightings during November. They might come out of the den to feed, or they may go into the den late depending on natural food availability in that given year. So it's highly variable.
But how often do they breed? Reproduce?
Every other year. Yep, typically it's every other year a sow will have cubs. So she has those cubs in the den, of course, during the winter. Those cubs stay with her during that first summer. Then they den up with her again. And then they're kicked away during that second summer when she wants to breed again, which is right now, like June, July is their breeding season. Mm-hmm. So that's when the female will kick those cubs away, which are yearlings now. And those are the ones that get into the mischief because they disperse.
Wandering,
Mom kicked them off and they don't know what to do. So they got to go set up their own territory. And sometimes they get into trouble trying to find food sources. But yeah, they typically breed every other year.
A typical sow will have 1 to 2, maybe 3 cubs?
Between 2 and 3.
Okay.
The average is between 2 and 3. And I just got a picture from Baldwin, a sow with 4 cubs, and we get a lot of trail cam photos of 3 and 4 cubs. But the average is about, they say it's like 2.3 on average if you look at
which
the
which is still
literature.
pretty impressive.
Yeah.
That's a lot of bears coming back into the environment.
Right.
So.
Right. And we don't have to worry about winter severity with bears like you do with deer. You know, that's one big factor that's taken out of the picture. But, you know, human mortality is the biggest mortality source for black bear.
Right. Just real quick, color phase. I was kind of curious about this. Are they common in Michigan, as common in Michigan as they are out west?
No, they're not as common out west. Out west, they have something, I can't remember the chemical name. Forgotten, but out west they've got a chemical in the hair that causes more of that color change to occur than it does in Michigan. But we do have bears that are brownish colored in Michigan from time to time, but it's not as prevalent as out west.
Okay. I was curious. I heard somebody throw out a theory that it had something to do with rainfall, like in drier climates they tend to have more color phase bears. Have you heard that?
I don't know the answer to that one.
Right. I think it was just somebody.
I should know that, but
theory,
I don't.
But
speculation.
Right, right. All right, so you draw your tag, finally. So what's the best way to come up here to the UP and hunt bears? I mean, it's not like out west where you can sit up on a tit and glass and then put on a stalk. I mean, you're either baiting or running with dogs, correct?
Yeah, the vast majority. We have a few people that will still hunt, or it'll be a bow hunter that'll get the third season bear hunt and just hope that a bear walks through or visits their bear bait or their deer bait when they're bow hunting in October. That's a possibility too. But yeah, the vast majority, about 80% of our bear are harvested over bait. About 12% or 13% of our hunting community are bear houndsmen. So We got a couple, probably about 1,000 bear houndsmen in the state of Michigan, but the vast majority are bait hunters. And you know, it's a largely forested landscape, so the only way you're going to see one normally is to bait it in. Mm-hmm. And that's what most people do.
For those of you listening that have never been up here to the UP, it's thick.
Yeah.
It's a different forest for certain. What is a bear's daily routine? They get up, they go for food and water, and they just kind of wander around eating all day, and then they go back to their den at night, or is it?
Yeah, and well, they don't even go back to their den now in the summer. They've got a pretty large range. The sow has a smaller range, especially if they've got cubs. But mm-hmm. you've got these bigger boars that roam around looking for food, and they've got bedding sites normally down in a swamp, like in a black spruce swamp or near a stream where they can remain cool. But yeah, some of the boars can have a 300 square mile range, so they move.
I was just thinking, like, in reference to putting bait out, if you know where there's a bear, I guess that kind of negates that question, because there wouldn't necessarily be a bear in the same spot for more than one day, necessarily, unless there was that bait there to kind of keep it in the area, right?
Right.
That's a big reason why bait works so well, because not only does it bring them in, but it tends to keep them in an area if you're planning on hunting them.
Yeah, and you'll have multiple bears. Mm-hmm. It's not uncommon to have pictures of 7 or 8 different bears visiting your bait sites.
I think you said earlier, you can start baiting a month before you can start hunting. So that gives the hunter some time to set up some trail cameras, figure out, is there a preferred bait?
That's what I was going to ask, if there are any regulations.
Yeah, do's and don'ts.
What you can use, what you can't.
Well, the only thing that's really outlawed right now is chocolate, and we pushed to have that removed last year, and there were some people that were really unhappy about that, but that there's theobromine in chocolate that could potentially kill black bear, not just black bear, but other wildlife species, so why would you use something that could potentially kill?
A potential poison for other species, too.
Exactly, so we banned chocolate in Michigan, but really that doesn't hurt anybody, because there's so many different baits to use. A lot of people really like using granola. People use corn. You can use popcorn, pie fillings, all kinds of sweets that bears really love. People get fish.
I've heard of cake frosting mixed with like granola, you know, trail mix, pretty much anything that is available to you that you could get easily. It doesn't have to be expensive. You can go down to a supermarket and buy some, I don't know if they're getting rid of a shipment of granola or whatever, throwing some stuff away like we talked about before. My grandpa, when we went up to Canada, we spent a lot of the summer before that getting donuts from a Krispy Kreme donut operation. They were throwing donuts away, so we would go there and clean out their day old, however old donuts, and then put them in 55 gallon drums in the middle of the summer when it was 90 degrees and it was hot and it sucked. Then we ended up taking them up to Canada with us, not even using that bait, because the guy that had been baiting for us had his own bait mixture of granola, I think syrup, purple cake frosting.
Yeah.
Just whatever's available.
Yep.
They tend to not be too particular. They like sweet and high caloric food.
Yeah, high caloric food. That's really what they like. And you can use scents, you know, you can use, I always tell people to use like liquid smoke, mix it with water, or you can use anise or raspberry extract and put that in a spray bottle and spray it around. That'll bring them in initially, and you can use grease also.
Yeah, we just learned where the raspberry extract comes from. The last podcast we did was with a buddy of ours, Chuck Powell, and he talked about trapping beaver and all the different uses that you can get out of a beaver, including the caster to make imitation raspberry everything with.
Is there any do's and don'ts as far as running with dogs? Like, can you shoot them out of a tree, for instance?
Certainly you can. Yeah, when you're using dogs. You know, and I was just talking to somebody the other day that called just to complain about hounds, and there is an issue there, and we've been trying to address it between bait hunters and hound hunters that really shouldn't be there, because we're one hunting community. We should really stick together.
Exactly right.
And there's people out there that do not agree at all with hound hunting, and I'm on the other side of that, definitely, because they say it's not fair chase to use dogs. Well, my gosh, I use a dog. I would shoot very few grouse every year unless I drove around on a four-wheeler like some people do.
Right.
But if I didn't have my dog, if I was just roaming through the woods, I wouldn't shoot many grouse compared to what I get with my dog. And a lot of people use GPS collars on their dogs. Mm-hmm. there's nothing wrong with that. There's people that use beagles. I talked about that. We do a lot of that in the winter. We mm-hmm. never shoot nearly as many snowshoe hares without those beagles. It's certainly not unfair. It's very challenging. And these bear hounds, and I would urge you to go out with a bear houndsman sometimes. It's very exhilarating and very exciting.
Oh, yeah.
You're driving all over the place trying to find where the hounds are. You got your GPS collar, especially if they're driving a bear. They can go
a long ways.
Many, many miles. So then you got to get out of your truck and go. You know, you might have to walk a couple miles, several miles. Some guys actually walk with their dogs. There's a guy that hunts near Ralph. His name is Doug Mummert. He's 80 years old now, and he's wow. in the woods with those dogs the whole time. And many other guys do this too. So it's a very admirable sport. But yes, you can harvest the bear out of the tree because that's when the bear's going to stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to catch up to right. it until those dogs tree the bear.
Tree.
Yep.
Now, I know the dogs, their job is to just track it down and hold it, but I mean, if it was a smaller bear, would it be a violation if the dogs killed it instead of you? Or is that not a thing?
It would be, but that does not
happen. That wouldn't happen.
That does not happen. I mean, it could happen if you were running cubs, but that's why we can't run right. bear until right. those cubs are large enough to run. And the sow will typically run the cubs up the tree, and then she'll take off. The cubs will go up the tree. The dogs will follow that sow during the training season I'm talking about. So, no, that is not an issue of killing bears. Actually, the bigger issue is bears killing hounds. I mean, that happens every year because you get a big boar.
Animal.
You get a big boar that refuses to tree, and that boar is going to turn, or a sow mm-hmm. will turn and fight those dogs instead of treeing. So you can lose dogs that way.
And there are things you can do too if you are hound hunting. There are protective equipment you can get for your dog just to try and help negate some of that. But
don't they make like a vest?
Yeah,
like a bite-proof vest.
Was it made out of Kevlar or something? I want to say that is a to your benefit to have it if that's what you want to do, but you realize you're going up against a bear that might be 200-400 pounds, and that dog, no matter how well he's trained or you know how much fight the dog's got in him, he's 40-50-60 pounds. Do the math there,
right?
The bigger animal's gonna win. The bear has all the advantage. So to say that it's not fair or not ethical to run dogs with bears, I think is an argument that a lot of people would have, that when faced with the facts, you know, actually getting out there and doing it, it's an argument that's easy to make if you don't understand the sport.
Yeah, and so, these guys, they love their dogs. Mm-hmm. They take care of their dogs all year, and it's a very – these guys, most of them could, you know, give a care less about deer hunting. They
right.
want to run their hounds, and it's a very, very expensive,
mm-hmm.
and this is what they live for, and it's a very admirable hobby.
Right.
And it's a dying tradition too, so we need to keep that in mind. There's fewer and fewer hound hunters out there, and we, you know, we've got issues with – because bears have a huge range, and because those hounds are following them, there's always these potential trespass issues mm-hmm. where the hound doesn't know where private and public property
right.
is. They're going to follow the bear where it goes, and houndsmen are becoming, they're very good, most of them, about trying to avoid those types of situations. So
hunting in an area that's a little more wide open where you don't have to worry about crossing into private property, for example.
Yeah. That's what they try to do. But even so, if that bear goes 20 miles, it's tough to go that
right,
far without
right.
running in the private land. So as a private landowner like me, if that happens, you know, hopefully we can be tolerant of, mm-hmm. of one another because we're the same hunting community. But there's also bad actors out there that would release their hounds near someone else's bait where they know someone else is baiting.
Mm.
There's bait hunters that try to take over other people's bait sites. I
right.
mean, there's just bad people out there too.
Well,
so
it's
that's,
like with anything else, if you got 100 people in a room, not all of those 100 people are going to be great, you know, stand up, want to take your kids around them kind of individuals. So,
yeah.
And it's sad to hear about it because it's usually those one or two bad actors that will give the community a bad name. It'll give, you know, you'll hear about a guy that gets caught poaching a deer down where we are or whatever, and everybody that hears about that thinks deer hunters are poachers. You know,
yeah.
it's easier to start that fire than it is to put it out.
That's right.
So
I agree.
You said it's an expensive sport. As we've seen some trucks on the way up here with some hounds cages in the back and stuff.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Yeah, you look at the GPSs they've got, the money they spend in gas, they're
mm-hmm.
beating the hell out of their vehicles.
Right.
You know, they're
off-roading and
right, and most of those hounds they're strike baits, so a lot of those dogs, they might rig the dogs on the back of the truck and just drive roads looking for tracks,
mm-hmm.
and others will bring those dogs to a bait site where a bear has been within the last 12 hours, and then they'll let the hounds go on that bait if they strike a bear on that bait.
Yeah, it sounds like, I don't know how somebody could say that it's so too easy to shoot one that's been treed by the dogs, because like you said, you got to go find it still. You got to find the dogs where they're at, trekking through this thick country, you know, as opposed to what, sitting over a bait pile and waiting.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, right. You're sitting on a deer bait. You're shooting a deer over right. bait. Mm-hmm. I shoot grouse if I get lucky enough to see a grouse in a tree. With my dog, some people say that's, you know, some grouse hunters will only shoot a grouse on the wing.
Right.
Well, that's not me. Most of my grouse are shot on the wing, but if one flies up in a tree, that's an easy one for me, right. finally. And I'm going to eat that bird. And
I'll shoot it in the head so you don't have to worry about ruining the body then.
That's right.
Still.
That's
right. Yeah. I guess what I was getting at is just, I think running with dogs, it just, common sense says to me that it's a little bit more admirable than just sitting in a tree stand over some bait. I mean, that's just me, though.
I mean, either way, getting involved in doing it beats the hell out of hearing us talk about it. So if any of this strikes your interest, give it a shot. It doesn't hurt to try it. You know, you might find yourself in a sport that you can really be a good ambassador for. You know, tell your friends if you enjoy it. Get your kids involved in doing it. And
because, I mean, I was thinking, too, if these things have a tree however many miles out in the woods, you got to get that thing out.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that's another part of it. And if you've ever drug a black bear, they are not like dragging a deer. Even if you shoot a bear, you know, the average that we register here in Marquette and other check stations, the average is about 150 pounds. You know,
that answers my next question.
Yeah, that's the average a lot. And they look a lot bigger than they are. So people, mm-hmm. when they shoot them, they bring them in, they want us to weigh them. And they say, this has got to be 300 pounds because we just drug it out and it took us forever. But in actuality, it's only 150. But we get, and that's on average, but we get many bears that are 300, 400, 500
That's a big pounders
too.
That's a big bear.
Yeah.
Now, identifying sex, like, so when you get your bear tag, does it matter which sex? Does it have to be a boar?
It does not. You can shoot a sow as long as she does not have cubs.
So a wet sow. Can't shoot a wet sow. Right.
Exactly. So every other year, as I said, sows will have cubs with them. Mm-hmm. They would have bred or, you know, have cubs with them. So you can take a sow if they do not have cubs. And of course you can take a boar, either one. Yeah.
Now I've heard of,
and no cubs. You cannot shoot a cub.
Right. I've heard of boars killing the sows young after she has them to get her to go into breeding again. Does that happen?
They call that infanticide, and that normally takes place when bear numbers are too large. When you have too many bear on the landscape, that's when you see boars killing cubs. That's usually the case. I don't think that happens very often at all, especially.
And I would imagine it's because you guys do such a good job of managing.
The hunters do. Yeah. The DNR just sets the quotas, but it's you guys that take the number of bear that we hope. And sometimes we might go over what our target is. We've had complaints about that, but really, if we shoot 200 bear when our target in that unit was 180 bear, if our estimate of bear abundance and our indicators are supportive of that harvest, then it's okay to exceed that target.
Right.
As long as retrospectively you're looking at the numbers, you're looking at the model, and everything is looking good, it's okay to shoot more bear than what you said was the desired or target harvest. So it's okay to breach that target.
As long as you have the environmental factors and the statistics and the data to back up the healthy ecosystem afterwards, and it's not a problem to exceed, you know, the estimated amount by a little bit here or there.
That's exactly right.
Like with the infanticide, you mentioned that happens when the bear population gets too big. That's Mother Nature's way of knocking that population down. If it's too big, then maybe you don't need a new litter of cubs coming into the world, you know, let some of the bears die off, and that's kind of, it's working itself out, basically. It's a problem that solves itself in a natural way as opposed to in a regulated way.
And Mother Nature can be brutal.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, there's...
Well, that's kind of where I was getting at is I've heard of out west with the grizzly bears, another ESA deal, right? So it sounds like, you know, these bully boars get to be these massive just eating machines, and they do that. They'll find a sow, eat all four cubs.
Yeah.
Well, that it would have to deal with the sow first, and a sow with cubs is one of the scariest things you'll ever find in the wild. It really is. So for a boar to get to the cubs, he would have to first go through the sow one way or another. And like you said, nature can be a pretty brutal place to be sometimes. So
yeah, that's the thing, because with the whole ES thing out west with the grizzly bears, it's like the people that are fighting to keep them on the ESA, they're not, you know, they've never seen a boar do that, you know. Right. They'll change their mind real quick if they're in their backyard and see a boar come in and just kill a sow and then eat its four kids. I mean, it's nature. Brutal.
Yeah, it's brutal. Yeah.
Okay, so now say you're out in the woods and you want to target a big boar. Not you say you don't want to shoot a sow. How would you identify the sex? As far as, like, if you're looking at it from a distance.
Is there any way to tell between a male and a female?
The ears.
At a distance.
Distance.
It's difficult. You know, the boars have more of a blocky looking head to me, but that's kind of hard to identify. But I would just look, if I was looking to do that, I would look at a lot of different photos. You can go online, and it appears, and in the wild, the boar's head seems larger. A large bear in general, is their ears are going to look smaller. If you see a bear at 50 yards and its ears look big, you know that's not a very big bear. And typically males get larger than females anyway, because those females are constantly putting most of their energy into raising cubs. So sows with cubs don't get that large. Even sows in those off years typically don't get that large, but there's always an exception to the rule. I know we had a sow that came in here last year that was over 300 pounds dressed.
Holy cow.
So that's a really big sow. But typically your males are bigger than your females, especially as they get up in age. But that blockier looking head on those bigger males is one thing, and you can always use binoculars, but a lot of times you're not going to have time to try to figure something that out. And there's no problem taking a sow without cubs. There's no harm in that at all. I mean, that's part of the sport. And you know, you can use trail cams too. A lot of people most people are using trail cameras and trying to target bigger bears or attract bigger bears. And I made that mistake. I don't use trail cameras, except I used one when I bear hunted 2 years ago, and I screwed myself because I had the trail camera out there. There were two big boars coming in. And on opening day, a smaller boar came in right before dark that I should have harvested because we love bear meat. He was probably dressed. He was probably less than 200 pounds, but it was a nice bear.
Sure.
I let him go because I knew those two bigger ones were coming in, and neither of those two bigger bears came in during the daylight. They were coming in at dark.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't get a bear 2 years ago, and I should have got one. Now I got to wait 5 years and
try again.
Yes, and it was all because of that trail camera. If I wasn't using that trail camera, I would have shot that first bear.
And been done with it.
A blessing and a curse at the same time, man.
We talk about it all the time. You don't ever pass up an animal on the first day that you would take on the last day. And that, I told you about my bear hunt in Canada. I shot, dressed, it was probably 120-pound sow. It was a smaller bear. And my grandpa and my brother gave me hell for it all week long until I was the only one going home with a bear. Then the shoe was on the other foot, and they didn't want to talk about it then.
So. Exactly, yeah.
And they had both seen plenty of bears, but they were passing up those little bears to get a bigger bear.
Well, yeah.
That's not how it always works out.
Nope.
I got to eat bear heart for breakfast, and they got to watch me.
There you go.
Yeah, I've made that trail cam mistake with deer before. You know, you see a 2.5-year-old walk out, nice buck. Let them pass because I got all these big bastards roaming around, but then you never see them. They just disappear. You know, they go nocturnal. It's like a switch flips as soon as October 1st.
We don't pass up 2.5-year-old bucks in the UP normally. Not at my camp.
Right.
Yeah.
What else did I wanted to get to? Oh, hibernating bears. So I'm just curious, when they go down to hibernate, they're just out until the spring, or do they occasionally get back up if it warms up?
No, actually, they're not true hibernators. It's called a state of torpor because their blood temperatures aren't typical of like cold-blooded animals that will have true hibernation. So they do get up during the winter. They're easily aroused. You know, they can get up and flee if something happens near the den, get up and flee and go to another den site or create another den. So it's not a true state of hibernation. And we've got biologists in the northern lower, Mark Borson does a lot of work in the winter. He's got several sows that he keeps collared for our surrogate sow program. In case we have orphaned cubs where the sow is killed, we try to place those cubs with a sow that he's got a collar on. And many, you know, they got to be real careful when they're approaching the den. And we do some of that in the UP too, on predator prey. And Doug Wagner, a retired biologist, did a lot of that. And I did some of that with him years ago. But you got to be real quiet when you approach the den, because you could kick that bear out of there and it could flee on you. So
we were up in the UP, I think it was the second to last year that we went up there. The neighbor down the road, Bob Gallup, if you're listening, he says, "Hey, I know where the bear den is," he found on his property. And then she was in there, and we all walked up, took pictures, and there's my, you know, my brother's kneeling down with his thumbs up, right? It's like, now you just told me that they're aroused pretty easy, because the whole time I'm thinking, like, oh, it's fine, she's sleeping.
She's sleeping, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
She is sleeping until she wakes up.
Until she wakes up, yeah.
Yeah, so I think we can wrap this thing up here. We've been going for about an hour. Do another final thoughts round. I'm going to go first there, Mr. Mustachio.
Again, just appreciate the time that you've given us today to sit down and discuss some of these things with us. I know I've learned a lot from things I didn't know I learned today. So I much appreciate your knowledge and your willingness to share that with us. Very important.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man, it's been a lot of fun. And to be able to pick a brain like yours, you know what I mean? It's an honor. And it's so cool that to actually sit down with somebody from the DNR and realize that we all are on the same team. You know, we all need to work together to keep these resources around and this tradition, you know. And we were talking about recruitment earlier too, off mic, you know, it's a big thing. We need to get up, we need to get out, we need to bring the kids out there with us. And it's just so much fun, because there's a lot of stuff that you take that you learn out in the woods or by talking to people like you, just about the environment, the habitat, and how nature just kind of does its thing, you know what I mean, that you can take and relate to everyday life.
There's so many lessons to be
learned.
At work,
at home, anywhere, you know.
Yep. From taking the time to strap on some boots or, you know, get your creek shoes on, get out there and get wet for an afternoon, catch some brook trout, you know. You do that, too, quite a bit. So.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's more to benefit from getting out and trying something like this than there is to gain from just sitting at home and listening to us talk about it. So like we say almost at the end of every podcast, get your kids up, get out there and do it, because us telling you about it is going to pale in comparison to how much fun you're going to have actually trying it yourself. So
yeah. And the thing is, if you have any questions, get a hold of you guys, right? I mean,
Website.
Do you have an email address?
I sure do.
We could give.
Yeah. My email address is swansonk@michigan.gov. So SWANSONK at Michigan, full word, Michigan.gov. My cell phone number is 906-458-1889. And I get lots of emails and calls from, you know, from hunters and folks that want to complain about things. And that's okay, too, because we take those seriously and we try to address problems. We can't make everybody happy, but you know, and I would urge people to, if you've not gotten out in the woods lately, it's a great place to go and just reflect, even if you're not hunting. Like for me, when I go brook trout fishing, it's a big escape for me.
Yeah,
I can get away from the job. Yep. I can get away from sometimes you need a break from your wife, right, and your kids.
Sure. Yep. So there's no better spot to clear your head than out in the wide open where everything else is clear around you. It's refreshing, restorative. There's healing properties to being out in the wild. You know, it's an experience that you're not going to get, like I said, listening to us tell you about it.
Right.
It's best felt by yourself, you know. Take someone with you. Share the experience. Conservation begins by us enjoying the resources that we got, you know, building the passion for them and then wanting to keep them in the way that they are, or better them, like with wolves or with the bears. Population control can be conducive to good conservation efforts.
Yes, yep. Well said.
So. Very nice.
Thank you.
Very nice.
That's it for me.
That's it, everybody. All right, Kevin, thank you so much, man.
Thank you.
It was awesome.
Yeah. Very nice to meet you.
It was definitely
nice
worth the trip.
Yeah.
And thank you for everything you do, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Anytime
I really appreciate it.
Overworked, you know, you feel like you don't know what you're doing, not making a difference, you are. You're doing a big service to us just by doing your job every day. So
good.
Thank you.
All right. And definitely get a hold of him, though, because, I mean, it's easy.
Yeah.
It's really easy.
He just gave you his phone number and his email address. Who does that? So.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you next time. All right, everybody, that's it. And again, thank you to Kevin for taking the time to sit down with us on his day off to answer all of our questions. Super nice guy. We had an amazing time talking with him, and we can't wait to get back into the UP and go see him again. Down the pipe from Rex Fur and Feathers, we are going to be sitting down probably the day this drops to record our first ever phone interview with a wildlife disease expert out of New Mexico to talk about chronic wasting disease. So if you live in Michigan especially, keep your ears to the ground for that one. As always, all editing is done by the Kyle Palmonter. All music and artwork is done by Shane Yoder from PutThemInASong.com and the Root Note Podcast. If you'd like to get a hold of us here at Rex Fur and Feathers, shoot us an email at RexFurAndFeathers@gmail.com. Look us up on Facebook at Rex Fur and Feathers. There is a group and a page. Twitter at RFF Podcast. And hit us up on Instagram at Rex Fur and Feathers. Hopefully everybody's having a good bear season if you were lucky enough to draw a tag. And we'll talk to you next time.